I see you're ready to go.
There you go, Judge. Shall I proceed?
Let me call the case.
That's right.
173092 Digital Ally versus, or Ally, is it Ally?
It's Ally.
Ally v. Utility Associates.
May it please Your Honor, Your Honors, I'm Jim Daniels. I represent the appellant Digital Ally. This is an appeal in a so-called patent abuse case or a assertion of patent rights in bad faith case. It's procedurally an appeal from a complete summary judgment granted by the District of Kansas against Digital with respect to all eight of its claims against Utility, the patent holder. It makes it a rather rich issue environment, but let me suggest that there are only two issues that are truly case dispositive in the sense that a resolution of either of them will be grounds either for affirmance or for reversal. And neither of these issues is unfamiliar to this Court. The first is whether, as the party moving for summary judgment, Utility satisfied its exclusive and unshiftable burden, either to affirmatively negate the proposition that Utility had asserted its patent rights in bad faith, or to show that Digital itself could never prove that that Utility had asserted its patent rights in bad faith according to the standards that have been set.
Well, is this court the appropriate court for that determination? Should this go to the Federal Circuit?
Well, I mean, pardon me, Your Honor, it may be that we've encountered some of this before, but I would submit that this court has full and complete authority to decide this because neither the validity of a patent nor the infringement of a patent is at issue. And I would suggest that under recent Supreme Court authority that, for example, would permit a Texas state court to determine whether a patent lawyer had committed malpractice in failing to do whatever patent lawyers are supposed to do with regard to patents.
Well, but that has nothing to do with the patent. Whether he committed malpractice.
Well, it did to the extent that patent law was involved as to whether he committed an error. That was determined exclusively by patent law. So, and I regret I haven't a cite for Your Honor. I do confess to being unprepared for the inquiry. I will tell you this, that if the court wished to transfer it to the Federal Circuit, under Supreme Court authority, the Federal Circuit would be obliged either to take it or refuse it.
Mm-hmm.
If they sent it back here, then this court could with confidence decide it, according to the Supreme Court. The second issue is like the first. It's the reverse side of it. Did Digital itself rebut the showing by Utility that, in fact, it had asserted its patent rights in objective bad faith?
Well, let me ask you a question on
yes,
that.
Yes, Your Honor.
Bad faith is not an issue in counts 5 through 9, is it?
No, it's not.
So you've waived any problems with
They're gone with the wind.
Okay.
I think we're principally talking here about the Lanham Act claim, the Section 2 Sherman Act, attempted monopolization claim, and the claim under the Georgia patent abuse statute is what we're talking about here. All of the claims, of course, in order to assert any tort claim against a patent holder, the asserting party must prove bad faith. There are nevertheless, as Your Honor has pointed out, certain claims that Digital asserted, such as trade secrets, misappropriation, et cetera, which do not apprehend a bad faith.
Well, didn't the district court have other reasons independent of bad faith as to counts 1 through 4?
Well, the question is whether the overarching determination the district court made in the face of the evidence that, in fact, there was no objective bad faith and that subjective bad faith needn't be considered, a proper conclusion, I might say, influenced all of its holdings. That was the principal reason why it dismissed or disposed of the Lanham Act claims. That was the principal reason why it disposed of the attempted monopolization claim. And that was the exclusive reason why it disposed of the Georgia patent abuse statute claim. Keep in mind, The district court made its own plenary determination that none of the letters which Utility sent to hundreds of digital customers constituted threats of infringement or anything other than pure notice, advisory, academic letters provided to persons presumably for their edification as to the existence of its patent.
Oh, wait a minute. Hold on. I mean, you think that was the purpose of the letters?
No, the purpose of the letters was to threaten Digital's customers with patent infringement, and they were effective for that purpose. The district court, of course, ultimately held...
I misunderstood your argument.
I beg your pardon, Your Honor?
I misunderstood your argument.
The district court ultimately held, of course, that one could not threaten digital customers with patent infringement because they couldn't be sued for patent infringement.
Counsel, could I just...
Yes, Your Honor.
This is a clarification on your response to Judge Kelly. Didn't the district court rely on more than just the bad faith element as to the Georgia statute claim and the Lanham Act claim? In other words, didn't it also say that the claim failed on the injury element as to the Georgia statute and the falsity element as to the Lanham Act claim? And if you're focused exclusively now on bad faith, have you waived any argument on those other elements?
We have not, Your Honor. And let me explain. The letters that were sent to the digital customers were affirmatively false. In certainly one material respect, when Utility claimed to digital customers, anyone else who would read, including in its press releases, that this patent had enjoyed a high degree of commercial success. In truth and in fact, as the facts show, it had enjoyed no commercial success. It had been treated with indifference by Utility's own Asinor, who was prepared to allow it to lapse for want of payment of a $5,000 renewal fee.
Counsel, can I just ask on that point you've been making? I saw that there were arguments in your reply brief relative to falsity, but did you make arguments about falsity in your opening brief?
Well, we maintained in our opening brief, Your Honor, that the statements were false and certainly cited the evidence from the record that would show that they were false. And in fact, it was with some trepidation that we repeated some of the same evidence in the reply brief. But the fact is that the patent enjoyed no degree of commercial success. No one's ever bought a license of it. If it was ever embodied in a product, Utility itself has withdrawn that product from the market because no one will buy it. According to its own officers, the product was defective. It did not function. And the only reason the patent came into play was to force this defective product onto an unwilling market. How was that market unwilling? Ask Motorola, the principal reseller of this product. Not only did Motorola not wish to have anything to do with Utility and its patents, but it didn't wish to have the market reminded that it ever sold the product that presumably embodied this patent.
So why is all of that relevant when the real issue is whether there was a valid patent? And if so, whether the conduct taken here was in protection of that patent, properly within the ambit of protection of the product.
Well, let me suggest to Your Honor, what Your Honor has articulated isn't actually the standard. The standard is twofold, if you believe the Federal Circuit, or various iterations of the Federal Circuit pronouncement, is that one must show that one had probable cause to claim an infringement of a patent. And in order to have probable cause, one must have facts that a reasonable litigant would have relied upon in asserting a claim.
All right.
Now, if mere possession of the patent, I stand in the well of the court, I wave the patent at Your Honors and say, I'm necessarily an objective good faith because I have a patent, it's presumed to be valid, and I earnestly believe that it is. Now, if that were the test, which Utility will tell you it is, then why do we have the objective test at all? Every single patent holder is always and forever in objective good faith because he can waive a patent at Your Honors and claim that it's A.
Aren't you getting out in front a little bit far? If the person went on to say, and if you buy from anybody else, I'm going to sue you. There's where the line is. But to say, I've got a patent, and you might want to check out my stuff before you go buy from somebody else, isn't that a different situation?
Well, if your honors, who have the right to de novo review of this letter, if your honors conclude that it's absolutely threat-free, that it's merely an academic informational exercise, it's not intended to affect anyone's buying decision at all.
Well, you hope it does if you're sending it out saying, I've got a patent and this is my device, and you'd be well advised to look at it and to buy my stuff.
Well, then if it's purely informational and I just want you to buy my stuff, why am I threatening you with lawsuits?
Well, I don't know that it threatened me with a lawsuit.
Well, why am I telling that you could? Why am I telling why am I telling the state of Nebraska that it can be sued and that it will be sued?
Well,
if it merely uses someone else's product.
If they infringe my patent, that's all they're saying. But let me ask you this: with respect to count one, the court found that Digital did not prove a relevant market or market power.
Right.
Now you have waived any argument on that.
Well, yes. Your Honor would have to, in order to affirm that Sherman Act finding, Your Honor would have to agree that the...
You haven't raised it. All you're talking about is bad faith.
That's correct, right? That's all I could do. But in order to affirm, Your Honor would have to find that, Your Honor would have to accept for the first time, presumably in this universe, the district court's announcement of the elements of a Sherman Act monopolization claim.
Which you haven't contested.
Different than this court has ever announced.
You haven't contested it.
I understand that, Your Honor.
Now, on count two, did you address the court's finding that utilities letters were not demand letters?
Yes, we did. We said that under a fair reading, they could be determined to be demand letters.
Okay. And did you address the district court's finding that the statements in those letters were not false?
Yes, we did, Your Honor.
In your brief?
Yes, we did, Your Honor.
Okay, where? I missed it.
Well, the... Pardon me, Your Honor.
Mm-hmm.
Your Honor's talking about the opening brief?
Yes.
I do apologize. And I think I'm peeking into my rebuttal.
Just send us a 28J letter when you find it.
Thank you very much, Your Honor. If I may, unless Your Honors have...
Your time's reserved.
Thank you, Your Honor.
May it please the Court.
Ready to go.
My name is Steve Schetzel. I'm with the firm of Mounier, Carlin, and Kerfman in Atlanta, and we represent Utility Associates. We'd like to make three brief points. First, the district court below did not reverse the burdens. Second, the district court below applied and should be entitled to an abuse of discretion standard, particularly on evidentiary rulings. And third, the patent at issue remains valid. Our first point, the district court did not reverse the burden. We rely on the Adams case and the Trainer case. In both of those cases, this court has found that a party in our position can prevail if we point out a lack of evidence that the other party needs to come forward with in order to meet an essential element. That's exactly what happened here. There was no evidence of market power below. There was no evidence of what the relevant market was below. There was no evidence below as to these letters that there was an assertion of patent infringement. There was no evidence that those letters were directed at Digital Ally. To the contrary, not only were they general, they were actually sent to some customers of ours, to some customers of Utility Associates. As to the false ad
How
claim.
How was the mailing list determined for those letters?
The mailing list, Your Honor, was determined by employing a young woman from a local college who, as a part-time job, went through public records and identified procurement officers and procurement departments at various state institutions. For example, the Denver Police, Colorado State Patrol, so on and so forth.
Right.
And it was independently developed from publicly available information. With that list prepared, the letters were then sent out to the people that were identified on that list. Below, as to the false ad claim, there was no evidence of materiality. There was no evidence that there was a deception seen here and that somehow someone would get the letter or the press release and be likely to be confused as to the origin of the digital products or some sort of characteristic as to the digital products. And as to all of these claims, there was no evidence of damage. Focusing, so first, in response to your question, Judge Matheson, yes, the court below did rely on other essential elements, and today is the first that we've heard as to those other essential elements that the appellant agrees that it has waived those objections. We agree with that. We think that they have been waived. Second of all, as to the bad faith element, in these elements, the cases cited by the court below are directly on point. The McCone case, for example, where there is a statement made that involves the communication of patent rights, in order for that statement to be actionable, you have to find that there is both objective and subjective bad faith. Subjective bad faith is easy, and here the evidence was that it was the opposite, that the author of the letter, Mr. McKeeman, did believe that, in fact, generally speaking, people in the industry were infringing the patent. That was the first fact in their pretrial order on which the other side relied. That fact is not in dispute. As to objective evidence, what they would have to show in order to meet the burden of going forward there is that there would be no basis for a reasonable person to look at claim one, for example, of the 556 patent, and it's called reading it on the device. They make an in-car video system, and so you would take the elements of that claim and read it onto their device. We routinely tell people it's a little bit like the weekly reader exercise, where it's words on one side of dog, horse, and cat. You take claim one, you put it on the other side, and you draw a line, just as you would for horse, dog, and cat for the first grade student. You see if each of those elements is present. That, if they could prove that an element was not present, could potentially give rise to some sort of objective bad faith, but there is no such evidence here. No one ever looked at the patent and performed the analysis necessary to determine if there was objective bad faith. There was no evidence.
Thus, counsel, what's your position on the jurisdiction question, particularly as to the Georgia statute claim? Should that claim be in the federal circuit rather than this circuit?
We'll start with the Georgia claim, if I may, Your Honor, in direct response to your question. The federal circuit would certainly be an appropriate place for it. The dividing line for us is that if the court determines that the statements here, under the Zenith case, for example, they're marketing statements that are communications that involve the assertion of patent rights, then the federal circuit, in our view, is the appropriate place for that, whether it be for false advertising or for the Georgia statute or even under the antitrust claim.
Is that on an exclusive basis or as a prudential basis? On what basis do you say the federal circuit is the proper venue for that or forum for that?
I don't recall the McCone case talking about prudential standing, Your Honor. The basis for our statement would be, for example, the McCone case, which is cited in our brief, where the court says that, for example, in order to have national uniformity in terms of what constitutes a proper notice of patent rights, that would be the type of issue that would be determined by the federal circuit.
And they would have exclusive jurisdiction if that were the case, wouldn't it?
I believe that to be the case, Your Honor, but I'm not certain of that. I've not researched it.
Thank you, Judge Kelly. Judge Kelly answered my question. I think that because if it's exclusive jurisdiction in the Federal Circuit, it obviously doesn't belong here. But if the jurisdiction is non-exclusive, and that is it's discretionary for us that it can be held jointly, that's another issue. But we expect counsel to be on top of that and brief us on that point.
You have the cases that we found on it, Your Honor. Obviously, the decision to appeal to this court was not our decision. We are the appellee. But in terms of what this court could also decide is, for example, if the court determined that these letters are, as Judge Kelly noted, in the nature of sales letters.
Counsel, I'm sorry to interrupt, but before we leave jurisdiction, sounds like you're moving off of that. I just wanted to follow up with one other question. As I understand it, one of the considerations on jurisdiction is whether the plaintiff's claim depends on resolving a substantial question of patent law. And so this is kind of a two-parter. Does the resolution of the bad faith question turn on resolution of a patent law question? If it does, as to the Georgia claim, does it matter that the Georgia statute has its own bad faith element, and would that save the claim for our jurisdiction?
The claim should, Your Honor, in another case, let me step out of the facts of this case for a second. Theoretically, such a claim should turn on a resolution of patent law. For example, objective bad faith. It would be a question of patent law whether or not Claim 1 of the 556 patent owned by Utility Associates covers a product made by Digital Ally. That would be a classic resolution of patent law type situation. Stepping back into the facts of this case, however, one reason that this court, I think, could still entertain that question is because the determination would be that there is no evidence related to that objective bad faith element. The absence of evidence, if you will, could be determined by this court, where the court would look at it and say, there's no resolution of that issue.
Even if we don't have jurisdiction, we can look at whether there is or isn't evidence?
That would be back to the Judge Lucero's question of whether or not it would be exclusive. And I don't know the specific answer to that. I believe that it is exclusive, so my short answer to you would be no. If the court does not have jurisdiction, I think obviously it would not resolve that question. As to the Georgia bad faith statute question, Your Honor, the Georgia state statute must also follow, if you will, the federal guidelines. It can't be contrary to or interpreted contrary to the federal requirements for what constitutes the proper communication or proper assertion of patent rights. So the bad faith element of both objective and subjective bad faith that you have as a result of the McCann case or of the dominant semiconductor cases, those same standards apply to the Georgia, or at least to application of the Georgia statute. So if I understood your question correctly, Your Honor, yes, in terms of applying the Georgia state statute, a plaintiff under that would still need to show that the notice letters in this case, for example, were not sent in subjective, or that they were sent in subjective bad faith, or that there was objective bad faith in terms of how that claim would read. Once again, we don't have any evidence in this case of objective bad faith.
Now, bad faith is just one of several necessary elements, correct?
Yes, sir.
And in the Georgia case, were the other elements established?
No, sir, they were not.
Therefore, just let me tease this out of it. If we were to conclude that the bad faith component is met by the appellants, does it necessarily follow that we would reverse, or given that there are several other necessary elements that haven't been brought forth to us, does it just
leave us at a quagmire.
No, sir. I think that even, for example, if you determined that the bad faith element were present
right.
in relation to the Georgia
right.
case, then the court could still find, as was found below under, we contend, an abuse of discretion standard, that these letters were not demand letters. Even if these letters were sent in bad faith, which we strongly urge that they were not,
right.
they were not demand letters. And the Georgia statute is directed at, it's effectively a troll statute approach. You have a company that sends out a bunch of letters to people that don't make anything and they're trying to get money for, you know, they're trolling for money, trying to keep you from making or selling what you have. Here, as Judge Murguia found below, they're not demand letters because there was no assertion of liability. There was no product that was named, for example. It didn't say that the Digital Ally products XYZ model number infringed. There was no specific claim that was identified. It infringed claim one. There was no mention of any customer or any competitor, excuse me, such as Digital Ally or WatchGuard or any of the other people that are in this industry. So even if you found that there was bad faith, the letter still lacks the substantive required elements in order for it to be found violative of the Georgia statute.
Okay.
Quickly, as to the standard of review, it is an abuse of discretion standard, and given the time, we'll simply point out that in a very well-reasoned, workmanlike job, the court below went through each and every element, and there is no argument here that in some way the court below was arbitrary or capricious in making, for example, a determination that the letter below was not a demand letter. There's no argument here that that was an arbitrary and capricious decision. As to the validity of the patent, it's important to understand how the patent claims are construed and how they're worked with. Patent Claim 1 might be directed to elements A, B, and C. Patent Claim 2 will say, I incorporate by reference the elements of Claim 1 and add element D. So the elements in Claim 2 are elements A, B, and C from Claim 1 plus element D, which gives you the A, B, C, D in that one claim. That's what you have here. Claims 8 and 11 incorporate elements from earlier claims.
Well, but if they found that those elements are not patentable, what effect is that on 8 and 11 that incorporates those elements?
There is no effect, if you will, Your Honor. The court, what was found in the IPR is that the elements of Claim 1, for example, okay. were unpatentable. But when you put those elements with the elements of Claim 8 or Claim 11, you now do have a patentable invention.
Okay.
So we can, in fact, assert rights in Claim 8 and Claim 11 because as set forth in the statute of 35 Section 282, which gives us the presumption of validity, and says that these claims do stand alone. Each is independent. My time is almost up. I'd like to close just by...
Well, if you'll wind it up, please, your time is up.
Thank you, Your Honor. The district court below took a careful and thorough review of each of these issues and made several factual findings, such as, for example, that these letters are not demand letters.
Thank you.
And those factual findings are entitled to an abuse of discretion standard.
Thank you.
Very briefly, Your Honors, what did Utility do to satisfy its initial burden regarding objective good faith? Because it had it. It says that we, Digital, failed to satisfy our burden to prove that that a reasonable litigant would not have believed that it had a prospect of success when it sent these letters to a competitor's customers. It was Utility's duty as an initial matter to show that it would sent these letters in good faith because it had a reasonable basis to believe that its patent had been infringed. And according to the Federal Circuit, that requires some effort to determine whether the claims appearing in the patent have been infringed by an infringing product. If Your Honors were to hold today that this patentee had satisfied its burden to show that it had asserted its patent rights in objective good faith, based upon no more than a statutory presumption and the belief in its president that the patent must be valid, this would be the first court, aside from the District of Kansas, ever to hold. Every one of the cases we've cited where a patentee has escaped a bad faith finding, its patent was either upheld in its entirety by a tribunal, including the Federal Circuit, or it was the subject of prior analysis by outside law firms who prepared claim charts comparing the claims in the patent, obviously erroneously.
So are you saying that in this case relief depends on resolution of a substantial question of federal patent law?
Well, it could, Your Honor. I mean, you know, that's the problem. According to the Federal Circuit, whether I've laced my shoes correctly may involve a substantial question of patent law. But I don't mean to be flippant, but it could in that broad sense in which some have applied.
Well, if that's the case, we don't have any jurisdiction.
Unless there is this the permissive jurisdiction that Judge Lucero has talked about.
Well, I'm not. I asked a question.
I understand, Judge. And now, with regard to the patent.
I don't want it to be quoted as authority for the proposition that there is.
I'll leave in just a second. Now, we've cited the Federal Circuit authority that holds if you have a dependent patent.
You're out of time, so you'll need to wind up promptly.
But I'm going to wind up right now, Judge.
Okay.
If you have a dependent patent and the independent claims are no longer enforceable, you can't enforce the dependent claims. I wish my friend, Mr. Schetzel, had told this court just how he would. Thank you, Your Honor.
Case submitted. Counsel are excused. Any further thoughts on jurisdiction? With the exclusive nature of it, you might be welcome to entertain. We'd certainly entertain. You'd be welcome to file 28J letters. Within 10 days.
We filed a brief.
Contemporaneously.
I beg your pardon. We filed a letter brief, a memorandum brief, and Taser Digital that addresses this stuff, and it was that particular case was ultimately sent to the Federal Circuit. I might propose to reuse some of that.
That's fine. I think it doesn't have to be any particular formal presentation. Just whatever information you have, cases, to us so we could have them within 10 days.
Thank you, sir.
Thank you.
Thank you.